I'm speaking today with Mayor Anise Parker, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today, Mayor Parker. You are serving your second term as Houston Mayor. You know, from my perspective on the outside, it seems like the second term has been a bit more smooth sailing than the first term. Better economy, no red light cameras, that sort of thing. From your perspective, how does the second term so far compare to the first term?
There is no comparison. The second term has gone much more smoothly. Part of that is the overall economy. I came in January of 2010, and I say all the time, it's like being dropped into a leaky boat and you're bailing and plugging holes and trying to paddle all at the same time. We did a lot of things that were unpopular but necessary, including laying off a lot of city employees. And at the same time, I knew that the city needed to jump on the infrastructure issues. And so that first year I was in office, we did the overhaul of the water and sewer rate structure, and we took to the voters the creation of a dedicated revenue source for streets and drainage, which has now become our Rebuild Houston program. And so dealing with a bad economy, but we weren't sitting still. We were still trying to make things happen. But now the economy is better than any place else in the United States. The prospects are good. Our unemployment's down. And a lot of the really tough things we did in that first year, and actually the first term, are paying off. You know, we're still down 2,000 city employees from where I started, and yet we've been able to figure out how to restore all the services that we cut. And so we're running leaner and meaner and more efficiently as well.
Okay. Now, as you noted, during your first term, there were things that were done both to reduce costs and in some places to get the city to recover costs of its services. Now, you know, water fees were increased, but a number of fees for permits and other like things.
There's two sources of revenue for cities. There's taxes and fees, and we operate some really large enterprise funds, which are like businesses. They have to self-fund. Airport systems and enterprise, it has to self-fund. I cannot take a dime out of the airport system and spend it someplace else in the city, and we don't want to subsidize it. The same is true of our convention facilities. And then finally, the third big enterprise is the water and sewer system. And so that is a fee for service where we recover our costs. And then to run the city, it is generally run through tax revenues, property tax, sales tax, franchise fees, and so forth. That's where we tried to go back through as part of our, where we're laying people off and searching under the couch cushions for money for the pizza guy. Look at, are there specialized services that very few Houstonians actually need that really wouldn't be considered core services of the city? I resisted and have always resisted, for example, creating a garbage fee for the city of Houston, which would touch every Houstonian. We're the only big city in America that doesn't have a garbage fee, and there are some reasons to do it. But that, in my mind, is like another way to put a tax on people. However, looking at specialized services and making sure that citizens pay for those services. For example, I'm not a golfer. I know there are a lot of golfers out there. We don't subsidize our golf courses. The golf courses are in a mini enterprise fund, and they have to support themselves. We have an inspection process for topless bars. I don't patronize topless bars. We went to see exactly what the cost was, and not some estimated inflated cost, but what's the true cost of doing the inspections under the ordinance that we have, and we set the fee for our strip clubs at this is the appropriate fee. So we looked at every specialized service that we provide and tried to peg the cost at providing those services. So a lot of those fees went up across the city. And I think that's an appropriate way to do business.
Where I was going with that was that, you know, in recent years, before you took office, there were a number of property tax cuts. But that was never on the table, you know, during time.
Bill White made a quarter cent cut in the property taxes, I think, every year he was in office, or certainly for several years. I don't think that was an appropriate thing necessarily to do. The city had needs, and certainly in the recession, as we were scrambling to provide services and nearly 800 city employees had to be laid off, that tax revenue would have been extremely useful. I did not at any time consider raising property taxes because I didn't feel that was the right thing to do to individuals and businesses that were struggling under the recession. My attitude was, we're all in this together. We're going to tighten our belts just like they're tightening their belts, except that we did look at those specialized services.
Okay. While it is the case that, you know, the economy is a lot better, Houston's revenue situation has grown, you know, because of that, it nonetheless remains the case that looking forward at the budget, there's still some shortfall in there. And, you know, I think it's...
Well, you know, there really... There's not exactly...
That's what I see reported in the newspaper.
Yeah, it's reported in the newspaper. And this, we're kind of on the horns of a dilemma here. I could show a budget projection for the next 5 years that showed no shortfalls, that we were fat and happy. I could. It's just a matter of... Because there are... I'm estimating property tax revenue, I'm estimating sales tax revenue, I'm estimating increased costs in certain areas, and they're all estimates. I spent 20 years in the private sector doing project economics. I can certainly, I mean, manipulate the numbers to look any way I want going forward. What we have chosen to do is to essentially give council each year a worst case scenario. Because I think it's always better to come in on the plus side than the negative side. And so we're constantly criticized, well, there's this huge budget shortfall. No, there's not. We are estimating, you know, if our revenue targets come in at the lowest they possibly could, yes, there might be, you know, that might be a true scenario, but that's not the expected scenario. Now, I'm not going to say that we don't have some budget challenges. One of them is... There is certainly a pension issue, but a lot of the things, again, those hard things we did in the first year that were very unpopular, you know, we changed the health benefits contract for the city of Houston, left a vendor that we'd had, I don't know, 16, 17 years, forced a lot of people to go to new doctors in order to do cost containment, and our health benefits costs, we spend more than $300 million a year on healthcare for our employees, flattened out. Instead of going up at double-digit rate every year, it's been flat for the last 3 years. We did a lot of tough and necessary things to do cost containment, but none of our budgets, and I've now passed my fourth budget, were deficit spending budgets. We managed to the revenue we had in, and a projection is a projection. Should I be giving rosy projections or should I be giving conservative projections into the future?
Well, let's talk about the pension situation. I mean, it's gotten a lot of ink, a lot of noise. I mean,
people are tired of talking about it. Do you know that? That's the interesting
Lord
thing.
Lord knows, I've been asking every candidate about it. I'm tired of talking about it. So let me ask you this.
I do breakfast clubs. I do civic associations. I do lunch talks. And there's almost no, actually, there are only two speeches a year I give where I don't ask for questions. One is my inaugural speeches, and the other is my inaugural speech, and the other are my State of the City speeches. There'll be 50 people in the room, and one person will inevitably ask about pensions, and everybody else just puts their head in their hands and yawns. It's not an issue that's getting traction. Is it an important issue? It clearly isn't an important issue. And it's important in all cities across the country. And in fact, there's some new recent data that shows how Houston stacks up compared to the other cities. It is not an acute condition. It is a chronic condition. P- pensions are operating on a 30-year horizon. It's like a person. You need to lose weight. You need to eat better. You need to stop smoking. And if you do those things, you're going to live longer. You're going to have a healthier life. They're not going to kill you tomorrow, but they'll certainly kill you in the long term. That's kind of where our pension is. We have things that are dragging us down. And yes, if I didn't have a pension burden, and the pension burden for the city is too high, I would have more money to put on the operations side, and we could. There are lots of things that the city needs that we could spend money on. The pension challenge can be boiled down into sort of a couple of simple statements. We have a commitment to our retirees that we made long ago, and we have to keep our commitment. We have an obligation to the taxpayers and to current employees to pay them adequately, and to the taxpayers to use their dollars efficiently. We need to meet that obligation as well. The city has no effective control over the three pensions. We have zero control over the fire pension, and we have a limited amount of control over the other two pensions. And we have used that limited control over the other two pensions to work productively. And I will give Bill White, who I just criticized for the minuscule tax cuts that have hurt us, for doing a great job in reforming the municipal pension. And he and I have both worked on the police pension, and we've put a lot of good government reforms in there. But nothing can happen in any of the pensions that the pensions don't agree to. And that's the challenge. It's hard to drive change when you don't have any leverage. And we really don't have leverage.
Let me ask you straight up then. Let's say tomorrow you woke up and you found out that you had all the leverage you wanted. You can make any change to the three pension systems that you wanted to. What would you do?
That's easy. I've also told the Houston Chronicle that, and it's been printed. I wouldn't make any change to anyone who is receiving a check today. That check would not go down. We've made a commitment to our retirees. I wouldn't make any change to the people who are in the system today, because they came in under a premise, and we ought to honor that. I think we should make available, and I haven't drunk the Kool-Aid on defined contribution instead of defined benefit. I think I can make a defined benefit plan that's reasonable and that works. So I think we ought to have available. Some of our employees want a defined contribution, so it ought to be a third. I mean, not a third. It should be an option along with the side of our defined benefit plan. Then here's the one that makes the change. I would eliminate automatic COLAs in all three pensions. And that simple change, eliminating automatic COLAs,
COLA being cost of living
increase. Living adjustments, would allow me to, I believe, bring the pensions into alignment. Now, there are some other things I would do to the fire pension, but the one change I'd make to all three pensions that would allow us to have a workable situation would be the cost of living adjustments. You know, when first year in office, I negotiated three union contracts, police, fire, and municipal. Not easy to do in any circumstance, but to have all three of them come up at once. And I'm not doing that to the next mayor. I did a three-year, a four-year, and a five-year contract with each different one, so they'd come up at different times. But I asked our city employees to go without any across-the-board pay increases. And so all three of them agreed. 2 years, there would be no across-the-board pay increases. Our retirees were getting a cost-of-living adjustment every year. Our retirees get a cost-of-living adjustment every year when the cost-of-living doesn't go up. In the depths of the recession, consumer price index, inflation, we had zero growth. They're getting a cost-of-living adjustment. that doesn't make sense. And that one change could put us on the path to self-sufficiency again with our pensions.
You talked about the amount of money that the city spends on health insurance, and that cost, while it's large, has been leveled out. As we speak here today, as you know, the Affordable Care Act has gone live. People are trying, at least, to sign up for insurance exchanges. My first question is, in what way, if at all, do you see the Affordable Care Act having an effect on the city? And two, what is and what should the city be doing to help its residents navigate the exchange and get signed up? Lord knows we have a lot of uninsured people. What are we doing and what should we be doing?
The city should not have a direct impact. We don't do we're not a major provider of public health services. The direct health care is provided by Harris County. We do immunizations, we do TB testing, we do STDs, we do things like that. So not the normal run of, I have a cold, I want to go to the doctor. That's the Harris County. And as an employer, we provide health benefits, and so it's not, and we don't have a Cadillac plan, so it's not going to impact us directly. We are working with the feds and with the county and other agencies to try to get people signed up, and we have received federal dollars to assist in that sign-up process. Obviously, anybody who's paying attention knows that we have a problem with the underinsured across the United States, and we have a very large problem in Houston-Harris County, and the cost of health care continues to rise, and it's one of the biggest reasons why people go into bankruptcy is unexpected health care costs. And so I think there's a lot of interest, a lot of pent-up demand. We have information about the Affordable Care Act available at many city facilities, libraries, health clinics, and so forth. And we have staff through the health department that are actively engaged in signing people up.
Okay. There was a study that came out about 2 weeks ago that called into question Houston as an affordable place to live. Said that the study done at Rice about the amount of people's take home pay they spend on
transportation,
housing and transportation.
Housing, they spend less on housing in Houston than any other big city, but people do spend more on transportation. But the interesting thing is that I don't know that it's helpful to do direct comparison to some of these other cities, because we make complex decisions on where we want to live, and there's each individual, each family has to do a cost-benefit analysis of, what do I want in a house and how far am I willing to drive to get it. And we have a range across this community of different types of housing stock at different price points. And, you can live close to your work or you can live far away from your work. You can live in an area that has certain amenities that you want, or you can live in areas that are fairly rural. And a lot of our peer cities, there is no opportunity for working men and women to live close in an urban environment and not live in slum conditions. And in Houston, you have a good quality of life, close in, East End, Midtown, lots of communities that's just not available anywhere else.
One thing that I noticed in that study was that it focused on the city of Houston. And oftentimes, in this sort of thing, there's not a distinction made between the city and the metro area. But this one, I didn't see a comparable study or comparable data for, the rest of Harris County or the rest of the metro area. There's been a lot of growth, population growth, in the greater Houston area, but the growth rate of the actual city of Houston is a lot lower than unincorporated Harris County, Fort Bend, and some other
places. We're already built up. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, but you know, we both know that population translates into things like political power.
Do you know that in the last 30 years, I believe there's been $6 billion worth of new investment in downtown Houston? In the next 3 years, you're going to see $3 billion of new investment in downtown Houston because we have so many new high-rises going up. I mean, it's a different thing. It's a different type of building that's going on. But you're also seeing a renaissance in a lot of the close-in neighborhoods. And, in fact, pressure's building up. The Ashby high-rise, the Heinz property on San Felipe, high-rise residential properties going into older neighborhoods because people want to live in town and want to be close to the amenities. I interrupted you. You had a...
Well, where I was going with that is, you know, how do you see the city of Houston competing for new residents against, you know, the rest of the metro area? What are we doing, or what do you see as the selling point for living in the city of Houston as opposed to, you know, unincorporated Harris County out on 290 or somewhere in Fort Bend or something?
We cannot be all things to all people. We're a complex urban area, and there are, somewhere in the greater Houston area, there is the right residential mix for anyone. But, you know, not all parts of Houston are going to have that. Not all parts of Houston are going to be the same. We're doing a good job of helping drive urban density in Houston and in close-in parts of Houston that never experienced it before. Again, we don't look like any other city in America. In the future, we're going to look a little bit more like it. You have the denser mid-rise, high-rise development. You're seeing a lot of young people who want that urban feel, and they're comfortable with apartment living. That's being built at a very, very rapid pace across the city. And yes, our suburban communities are offering more of the suburban, you know, the traditional suburban lifestyle. But there are still parts of the city of Houston in the corporate limits of Houston that can offer that as well. And we're doing what we can to preserve those neighborhoods, but also to drive infill development, which is why we took our development code, Chapter 42, and extended it to the entire city of Houston.
Of course, what's happening with a lot of the infill and the high-rise development that you alluded to is that you get some tension between people who like the urban idea but complain that, you know, building these things, one, changes the character of their neighborhood in ways they don't want, and two, it puts a lot of pressure on the transportation infrastructure. The streets are crowded. I mean, we've both lived in Houston a long time. You know what it used to be like driving down, say, Richmond or Kirby, and what it's like now. We've got, you know, Metro's bus system is improving, and we've got some light rail coming in. How do we...
Transportation in any big urban area is always going to be a problem. And you can't point to any big urban metropolis anywhere in the world that doesn't have transportation challenges. And fortunately, we're working hard every day to address them. You rightly pointed out that Metro is much improved and does deserve the title of the new Metro. There are three light rail lines under construction. Christoph Spieler is leading an initiative from the board to reimagine the bus routing system, where they're working on the bus rapid transit through the Galleria. The park and ride system functions very, very well. But we're a city that is built on a horizontal model, not a vertical model, and we're going to depend on our street grid. What has helped the city and has come about fairly organically, since we are an unzoned city, is the fact that we're a multinodal city. We have a very vibrant downtown where, as I said, billions of dollars are being spent in downtown Houston right now. But we have five or six other significant commercial nodes. And what's happening is that you have the commercial node where you, jobs are being created, you have the retail ring developing around them, and then you have the residential outside that. What's happening in Houston is that it's like multiple cities with town centers occurring, and you're going to see traffic patterns develop around those town centers. If everybody were into the future, all concentrated on getting in downtown Houston in the morning and leaving downtown Houston at night, I don't know that there's any way that we could work our way out of it. But the way that the city is developing, and we've recognized that pattern and we're trying to assist that pattern, is that multinodal concept.
Well, talking about downtown, let me ask you, do you anticipate the downtown food truck ordinance coming back up anytime soon?
Absolutely. I have made my position clear. I support, I don't see there's any reason, I support food trucks. I don't see there's any reason to have an ordinance that's different downtown than anywhere else, and some of the arguments against it were absolutely ridiculous. There are five or six things in the pipeline that have to go to council, and a payday lending ordinance, a wage theft ordinance, food truck ordinance. We've been working on a ordinance about hoarding. There are a number of other things, and it's just a matter of getting council's attention, getting them through when we get to them. They have been not derailed, but perhaps sidelined just a little bit by so many other major issues that the city's had to deal with.
When I first interviewed you for mayor in 2009, one of the themes of your campaign back then had to do with crime and with getting the different crime-fighting organizations in Harris County, sheriff, Metro Cops, constables, and so on.
And they can talk to each other
now.
They can talk to each other now. That you cannot work together if you can't communicate. And the city bit the bullet. We spent millions and millions and millions of dollars doing this, but we migrated our radio system. They can finally communicate with each other. So the first big hurdle has been taken care of. I think you'll find that the city and the county are working together more and more closely on law enforcement initiatives, and in fact, the joint processing center that's been contemplated for that's on the Harris County ballot is a huge benefit to the city as well. It'll allow us to close our jail down finally, something we've been trying to do for decades. We're working much more seamlessly with. I'll give you an example here. I'm going to digress for a second. When I first came in, one of the issues that came to my attention, I was getting a lot of calls from neighborhoods about truant kids. And I followed up on it, and you know, all the ISDs have police departments. And I'm like, well, why aren't you guys going out and picking up these truants? In their mind, their territory was the schools themselves, even though they have jurisdiction outside. Well, when these ISDs created their own police departments, the Houston Police Department was under the impression that the ISDs were going to do the truant enforcement. And so in the immediate vicinity of the schools, at least, that we'd created an inadvertent no man's land. And so brought together Jimmy Dotson, who's the HISD chief, my chief McClellan, and they, you know, figured out a way to do those kind of handoffs. I would, for the long-term health of our community and for the taxpayer dollars, it would be great to see a lessening of the number of law enforcement agencies, but most of those are chartered by the state of Texas. I think we have too many constables down here. I think the constables ought to be, some of the constable positions ought to be consolidated. That's a Harris County decision. I think that the fact that our ISDs, you know, every ISD wants to have a police department is somewhat problematic. I'd love to see, and I'm going to continue to work on a merger of the Metro Police with the Houston Police Department, and I think that that's doable. It's not the first thing on my agenda, but I think it might be something that can happen over the next couple of years.
What's the prospect for the for doing a joint crime lab with the county?
Just as we're doing so many other joint things, like the processing center, Harris County's working with us now on our sobering center. There's lots of new collaborations. They're working very closely with us on our hike and bike trail expansion, the BioGreenways 2020. All of these things happen because we have good communication. I'm not going to predict when and where, but I am confident that there will be a joint regional crime lab in the future.
Something that you've recently talked about in the wake of the Supreme Court decision on DOMA and the non-discrimination ordinance that passed in San Antonio is revisiting the City of Houston's policies on non-discrimination ordinance and I believe on the Charter Amendment from 2001 that forbids the city from offering
Domestic partner benefits.
Or plus one benefits, however you want to call it. Where does this stand right now? And at the risk of being impertinent, why is it taking so long?
I've been asked a lot. It's going like the food truck ordinance and all of these other ordinances I mentioned that are out there. And I have a wish list, and I check it periodically to see how we're doing on moving some of these things forward. There are thousands of things, actually millions of transactions that have to happen in the city every day. And the process of the city has to run smoothly. And my interest is when I bring something to the agenda that it gets passed. I'm not interested in bringing something forward and losing, although, there are certain things I'm willing to go down with the ship on. So, because it's not a public process, doesn't mean that it's not happening in conversations with council members, in negotiations, behind the scenes. I know that we need a non-discrimination ordinance, and I'm very excited to see that this year organizations are putting our council candidates on the spot and getting them to publicly take the pledge. So I think the time may be right for something to move forward. Now, the changes with the Supreme Court has announced and the issues of our charter and how we treat city employees who are engaged in domestic partnerships may be completely invalidated with the shift to equal marriage. Because, interestingly, our charter is focused on domestic partner benefits, and where the country seems to be headed is equal marriage. So there, may be other opportunities to address that issue.
So are you suggesting that if a city employee were to marry his or her same-sex partner in, say, Massachusetts?
I think that's the trend that's going to happen around the country.
Even though such a marriage isn't currently recognized in Texas.
Because the Supreme Court has indicated that a marriage is a marriage. And at some point they're gonna have to sort it out. So I think this is gonna resolve itself.
I'm seeing future litigation here.
Of course,
not that that's a bad thing.
Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. Of course there's gonna be future litigation. But I will bring a non-discrimination ordinance to council for a public vote before I leave office, and I fully expect to be here for the next 2 years, so it will happen.
All right. Speaking of litigation, City of Austin and Dallas County have both joined in the litigation against the Texas voter ID law. Do you see that as something that the City of Houston should get involved in?
That's the first time I've been asked that question. I don't know. Honestly, I don't have an answer to it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Do you anticipate voting for the Astrodome referendum?
Yes. Yes. I don't think the convention space is its highest and best use, but I want to save it. And I actually think, I don't think if it fails, the county's going to go out and demolish it right away either. But at least we've elevated the public discussion of what happens to the Astrodome. Right. I'm going to vote yes on both of the county items.
And how about the water referendum, the state?
I actually went up and testified for that. Houston has good water rights and good water availability into the future, but the rest of the state is suffering. And in order for the rest of the state to have access to some of what we have and not to have them look at our water, I'd like to see this money be made available. It's a great idea for a revolving fund. It's certainly an appropriate use of the State Rainy Day Fund.
Okay. Well, let's bring this all together then. You are looking at your third term in office. Why should voters vote to give you that third term? What can we expect from Mayor Parker's third term?
I have successfully led this city through a very difficult economic downturn into our current positive and actually very exciting economic present, that the city is being more efficiently and effectively run. We're doing more with fewer city employees and a very effective use of tax dollars. But there's still lots and lots of work to be done. I came in with five priorities: jobs and sustainable development, public safety, infrastructure, quality of life, and strong focus on fiscal responsibility. We've made tremendous progress, obviously, on jobs and sustainable development. Some of that driven by the city, some because of the underlying strength of our business sectors here. Public safety, the radio process has been transformative. We have more police officers on the street than we have in the past. We're using technology better and more effectively, and in fact, the latest new technological advance for our police, we're moving to body cams for police officers. The infrastructure, I mean, clearly, I've had a big emphasis on infrastructure. We're overhauling water and sewer lines. We're overhauling our street and drainage system. But decades of deferred maintenance takes time to fix, and I'm just going to ask people to be patient. I know the roads are a mess. I know there's lots of potholes out there. We are getting there. We are putting more and more money into it, and the projects through Rebuild Houston are beginning to grow up exponentially. Our quality of life is clearly better in terms of more access to the arts, more access to parks. Our BioGreenway initiative is going to be something that, while the hike and bike trails over the next 5 years are going to be fantastic, I think 10 years from now, as you see the changes that are going to happen on our bios, as people begin to use those spaces as linear parks, we'll make Houston one of the greenest cities in America, and I'm very excited about the potential of all of that. I'd like the opportunity to complete the process I started, to finish these major initiatives that are changing the face and shape of Houston in positive ways.
Mayor Anise Parker, thank you very much for talking to me today.